It's 8464CA. Are you an ageing parent? Maybe you're a child with an ageing parent. I'm certainly in that boat, and it can present some real challenges. This morning, listen up. I've got a really important story for you, and this is a fantastic new book that's just been released. It's called Avoiding the Ageing Parent Trap. Brian Hurd, he's a leading elder care lawyer and a man with amazing experience in this particular field as well. He's certainly sought after as a speaker because he's of his particular knowledge in these areas. Passionate, 20 years experience in dealing with elder law and the demands of aging parents. Brian's expertise lies in handling disputes and dysfunction brought upon families by aging parents. Maybe that's a bit of a negative way to cast it, but I guess that's the reality. Brian Hurdy joins me this morning. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Murray. Very good.
Wonderful good to talk to you. And look, you know, it's very timely as well because the type of challenges that are covered in your book, as we know, we've got an ageing population here in Australia. Parents are with us for a lot longer, but unfortunately, the healthcare system and their health may not quite keep up. So it presents some real challenges. What I'm keen to talk to you about is, some of the things that are important with respect to, you know, enduring power of attorneys, advanced healthcare directives. But let's start about some of the impacts, particularly on families. You know, when you have suddenly an aging parent and care needed, it can really throw a family into dispute and, of course, dysfunction as well.
That's right, Murray. And can I just tell you why I've written this book? Because that's a good lead-in to the reason, and that is we as Australians have this cultural aversion to confronting the future and failing to plan for the future. So when it comes to our aging parents, our parents themselves tend to wait for something to happen, and we as adult children tend to watch them waiting for something to happen. And then we have this other factual aversion to the consequences of living longer, and that is we suffer from what's called frailty creep. The longer you live, the more frail you will become, and then you become dependent on other people. Now, if we accept that and understand that, a lot of my book then addresses what happens if you don't do that. In other words, it's like therapy for people who are avoiders, because most of us deal with events in life. So we wait for the event to happen. You know, the phone call you get from your sister one day, which says, "Mum's in hospital, they've done everything they can for her, there's no more they can do, she can't stay there, she's a bed blocker, she has to go home, but she can't go back to her own home." So suddenly the family is thrust into this crisis management mode because they haven't planned for this event. And that's what my book addresses, this failure to plan for these events, which are almost predictable, and yet we want to avoid it.
And look, you know, there seems to be a certain amount of aversion, you know, even on behalf of aging parents. I mean, how many times have I heard, "Oh, don't put me into a nursing home, knock me on the head, I don't want to be there." But at the end of the day, that's the reality for a lot of parents and a lot of families. It's often quite a good answer too.
It is. And most parents will say, I'll let you know when I need your help, because they avoid it as well. But they don't understand the consequences of this frailty creep. In other words, I want to stay at home for the rest of my life. That's a very admirable ambition. But the reality is, if you do and you need lots of care, then who's going to provide that care and who's going to pay for it? Because if you want, for example, Murray, 24 hours, 7 day a week in-home care, it'll cost you on average about $6,500 a week.
Wow.
Now, who's got a lazy $300,000? Yes. That's even with government subsidies. So who's got that sort of money per year for the privilege of staying at home? So the consequence is, at some stage in our later life, we will need care. If we need lots of care, that's a real issue, because the question is, where is that care going to be provided? Now, residential care is the obvious example of where it can be provided, but we have this problem, this conundrum, where we want to stay at home.
We often have a situation, you know, with scattered families here in Australia as well, is that you may have one person, one family member who's in a position to help. They'll do it for a fair amount of time, but, it often ends up being a real impact on them. Jealousies come in, you know, you've got other brothers and sisters that are far away that, you know, might make the occasional phone call. So, you know, the whole thing spirals down in a lot of ways, Brian.
It does indeed. And in fact, we call that particular child a martyr child. And one interesting development in the law with martyr children, the one who cares for their parents in their later life, is that some of them are now challenging their parents' wills on the basis that even though they got an equal share from their parents' estate, they deserve more, because what they did in their parents' later life was something that the other children didn't do. Therefore, they're entitled virtually to almost compensation. out of their parents' estate for the martyr steps they took to protect their parents' interests and support them. So it's generating a whole new legal development in terms of this particular type of child who was well-intentioned, no doubt, but often has to compromise and sacrifice other aspects of their life in order to provide this care. So the issue is, how does that impact then on parents' wills? So the law is also having to address this development in terms of care as well.
Let's talk about some of the things that, you know, are covered in the book. And I guess it's about those practicalities right from the word go. If a parent suddenly is struck down and becomes very ill, they may not have capacity even in relation to the financial things. They might be financially quite well off. But, you know, often for the people that are trying to care for them and sort them out, you know, those situations can present a real challenge as well. So I guess your book talks about some of the plans and some of the key things that you need to have in place, enduring power attorneys, etc., so you can deal with these issues in at least a practical way when they do come up, usually unexpectedly.
That's right. So the overriding thrust of the book is to give you a picture of your family's future with your aging parents and to effectively forearm and forewarn you about what is likely to happen. Now, we have what's called a family plan. You may remember family planning, Murray, from your earlier childhood.
I do.
This is called later life family planning.
Yeah.
So this is where adult children need to be on the same page to repress their enmities and to get together and join with their parents, if possible, and plan their parents' future with them. It's family planning in another guise. So they need to look at the issues of what they need to confront that could happen, such as the health and capacity of their parents, their family dynamics, where are my parents going to live when they need support, what's their financial situation, how are they going to pay for it. So all these sorts of things need to be addressed in advance. And where they're not, I have an example recently, Murray, you're pleased to know, where most of us think we have potentially two parents, but most of us, a lot of us, have four parents. We have our biological parents and our step-parents.
Sure.
And as a consequence of that, we have four aging parents to confront as adult children. Mm. And I had a case recently where there were four parents and the couple involved had their respective parents, and those parents were all aging at the same rate and they needed care. Some wanted to move back in with the couple, and others had to go into residential aged care. Now, that was an absolute minefield, because what it did was expose the tensions between the members of the couple, the husband and their wife, and their natural bias towards their respective parents. The upshot, and this is the implosive effect of your aging parents, is that this couple ended up divorcing. Not because they didn't love each other anymore, but because they could not reconcile the respective interests of their parents as between the two of them, particularly when there were financial demands made upon them. So that's the worst case scenario in some ways of what can happen, where you don't have this agenda and where you need to have the courage to raise it with your parents in advance and your siblings as well.
Mm.
It's an intelligent thing to do, Murray.
And look, you know, when you consider the impact that it has on aging parents when they see all this, you know, basically unfolding in front of them, that's an extra stress they don't need. And I guess the impacts on families and extended families can be quite deep. And sometimes these are wounds that can't be healed. Go and pick it up. It's just been released. It's a wonderful new book. It's called Avoiding the Aging Parent Trap. It's by Brian Hurt, my special guest this morning. Some really timely advice. Brian, have a fantastic day, and thank you so much for your time.
You too, Murray. Thank you for the time.
From Bentley Park to Smithfield, classic hits 4CA.